up in the portal, the Mayan Museum, they have a complete set of the World Watch papers, which are short booklets on timely topics, and they found two of them there. One, number 56, Materials Recycling, The Virtue of Necessity, and number 76, Mining Urban Wastes, The Potential for Recycling, that deal with just one aspect of this topic. My name is Bill Giddings. I teach environmental science at Pacific Lutheran University in greater downtown Parkland, which is just south of Tacoma, Washington. And for the past 9 months, I've been living, breathing, and sleeping garbage as a member of the Pierce County Solid Waste Advisory Committee. Also, to help prepare for this session, I joined the Holden Garbology team last Tuesday, and you'd be surprised what I now know about you all. It's a consciousness-raising experience that I heartily recommend to everyone. 8:30 Monday through Friday behind the hotel, one or two of you would be most welcome by the friendly garbologist to be initiated into the mysteries. I'm also grateful to Pastor Ron Vignek for giving us the biblical word last week in Philippians 3:8, "For his sake I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as refuse." Ron told us the Greek is skabula. That's a very useful word. And that's what this session is about, solid waste. There's no away to throw it. Most of you probably recall some of the 1987 story about the traveling garbage barge carrying just over 3,000 tons of commercial trash from Islip, New York on Long Island. They tried to unload it at Morehead City, North Carolina to go to a nearby landfill, but they had no signed contract and state officials ordered it back out to sea. They tried again in New Orleans when the state health department there said no. In its 164 days and 6,000 miles of travel, this garbage was also turned away from Florida, the Republic of Belize, the Bahamas, as well as all five boroughs of New York City, until finally it was incinerated in Brooklyn and the ashes interred back home in Islip. Not so well known is the fact that every single landfill in Long Island has to close next year by state law. The year before the Islip barge was loaded, a much larger ship, the Keon C, was filled with ash from Philadelphia's incinerators. 15,000 tons of that, bound for the Bahamas, who didn't want that either. Nor did the Dominican Republic, Honduras, or the West African nation of Guinea-Bissau. While the Keon C was still loaded, a plan to ship ash to Panama for use as fill in building a new highway. Well, before we were interrupted, the Keon C was at sea loaded with 15,000 tons of Philadelphia ash, and the Panamanian government was turning down a proposal to ship other ash to Panama for road fill because they feared toxic effects of materials leaching out of the ash. In November 1988, the same ship, which had been renamed by then the Pelicano, turned up empty in Singapore. No one would say where the ash was dumped, but one guess is the Indian Ocean. Now, raw garbage from Philadelphia is trucked as far away as Ohio to be landfilled. Three barge loads only of their ash were reluctantly accepted by South Carolina, but no more, and now they have a quarter of a million tons of incinerator ash stockpiled looking for a final resting place. These incidents are just part of the crisis situation in the northeastern United States, where $1 billion a year is spent trucking 10 million tons a year of garbage across many states into the Midwest. While $17 billion is being spent this year across the country on incinerators. The vendors don't like to have them be called incinerators since, for economic reasons, they all generate steam and or electricity. They prefer they are called waste to energy plants or resource recovery facilities. It's all Skabula. I'd like to use Pierce County, Washington as an example of the range of options that appear to be available, where things aren't yet quite as desperate as they are on the eastern seaboard. Some options, however, are no longer available to us here by state law and regulation, some of which was passed just this last spring by the Washington State Legislature. Currently in the United States, 80 to 90% of mixed municipal solid waste, as the jargon goes, is dumped in a hole in the ground and covered periodically with dirt, and that's called a landfill. Washington State had 260 landfills in 1984. It had 100 in 1987, and many of those are closing this year as the state minimum functional standards for landfills come into effect. As rainwater percolates through the rotting garbage, toxic leachate trickles out the bottom, potentially poisoning the groundwater and people's wells. Both the city of Tacoma landfill and the continuing operating landfill in Pierce County are federal Superfund sites for hazardous waste cleanup. Lacking air under the ground, flammable methane gas forms. South of Seattle, this form of natural gas migrated under the Interstate 5 freeway, built up in homes on the other side to the level that people were evacuated so they wouldn't risk being blown up in their own houses. New and continuing landfills must now be lined with plastic and clay under the minimum functional standards, but even so, they will no longer be able to accept whatever we want to throw away. Under the 1989 law, waste reduction must become a fundamental element of solid waste management in this state, and I quote from Engrossed Substitute House Bill number 1671, "It is therefore necessary to change manufacturing and purchasing practices and waste generation behaviors to reduce the amount of waste that becomes a governmental responsibility. Source separation of waste must become a fundamental element of solid waste management. It is the responsibility of every person to minimize his or her production of wastes and to separate recyclable or hazardous materials from mixed waste." End quote. How many here from Washington State? Did you know that your legislators have that message for you? After the fundamental strategies of waste reduction and source separation, the priorities in order are first, recycling. Second, the processing of mixed waste. Third, the incineration of separated waste. And as last priority or last resort, incineration or landfilling of mixed waste. It is this state's goal now by law to achieve a 50% recycling rate by the year 1995. Nationally, the recycling rate stands at something less than 10% now. Pierce County in its solid waste management plan claims 18% now. Nationally, less than 10% is incinerated, although that is an area of increasing interest across the country. So let's look briefly at the various possibilities. First, waste reduction. This includes, by the definition, reuse as well as non-use of materials. For example, using refillable bottles for beverages, which is practically extinct in the United States, but still by far the prevailing pattern in countries like the Netherlands and Norway. If those are used and refilled, then they aren't waste. If once-through bottles are used as throwaways, then they are waste. Washing out cloth diapers instead of using disposable diapers is another example of waste reduction, and one of my committee members investigated and found that where it's available, diaper service is cheaper than purchasing disposable diapers, and that doesn't count any of the costs of disposing of the disposables. But it is packaging which is now the largest component of garbage in the United States. one-third of all our garbage is packaging, and its amount has increased by 80% since 1960. Because of increased use of prepackaged foods, the United States threw away 400,000 tons less food in 1987 than in 1960 into the garbage, but in the process generated 20 million more tons of packaging waste. We're paying now $29 billion a year for food packaging, which is more than the farmers are paid for the food in the packages, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Plastics are the largest growing elements in packaging. Plastics are difficult or impossible to recycle at present, dangerous to burn. They don't break down in the landfill, but actually, neither do food or paper break down much in that landfill. They dug up some 40-year-old garbage and found they could still read the newspapers, and the oranges looked pretty much intact. Some localities have passed laws to deal with packaging one way or another. Several states have laws requiring at least deposits on beverage containers, which could give an incentive for reuse as well as recycling. Suffolk County, New York bans non-biodegradable plastic food wrap, whether it's bags for the grocery store or what your hamburger comes in. The biggest problem with that law is that they can't tell by looking whether the packaging now is legal or not. This same Washington state law now forbids counties or cities in this state from passing bans on packaging like that one, or passing their own container deposit laws. It preempts those powers for the state until 1993 without any intention the state intends any indication that the state has any intention of using the powers it has preempted. Recycling, by our definition from here, is transforming waste materials into usable materials. That would include remelting glass or aluminum cans to make new ones, rather than just washing and refilling the old ones. Repulping waste paper into new paper, and transforming plastic pop bottles into flower pots and park benches. 20 recycled aluminum cans can be made with the energy it takes to make one new aluminum can from the ore. Back in 1981, the United States threw away more aluminum in beverage cans that weren't recycled than the continent of Africa produced, both from ore and from recycling. Even though we now recycle nearly half of our 66 billion aluminum beverage cans a year. I could give a week's worth of sessions on recycling alone, but the schedule doesn't permit that, so I will have to content myself with the conclusions from World Watch Paper 56 on recycling, that three things really are needed. First, consumers must begin to pay the full costs of the materials that are used, including their environmental costs of mining ore or trees, and you can just look around you at Holden Village to see what that might mean. Paying the full cost also includes ending energy subsidies and restrictions on exporting recycled materials that make recycling less profitable than use of new materials. Second, as a matter of policy and practice, we must build world markets for scrap paper and metals. My secretary's church used to recycle high-quality office paper for the benefit of the church as well as the environment. My own church used to recycle newspapers, but both have quit that because the bottom have dropped out of both markets. And the markets were the export market, chiefly to Asia. Dashiwa, a Japanese company, is planning to build the world's largest pulp mill in Port Angeles, Washington. They've been asked by the state of Washington to consider using some recycled paper along with new wood in that plant. Their reply was that they can't make the quality of paper that their customers want using recycled paper, but they are reconsidering and have postponed their final planning. Third, there needs to be greater collection of recyclables, and that's what our new Washington State law emphasizes. With source separation as a fundamental priority, in other provisions, it requires curbside pickup of recyclable materials in urban areas, unless the government of that area convinces the state that their alternative to curbside pickup will be at least as effective in promoting recycling. You all have a chance at practicing source separation here at Holden Village, as in many communities across the country. And actually, you folks are doing pretty well, from my one-day study, except that lots of bits of plastic do show up in the paper. Candy wrappers, for example, are plastic nowadays. Juice boxes, although have some paper in them, have plastic interwoven with that. The straws are plastic, and most plastic can't be recycled at present. Here at Holden, we don't burn the plastic because of the air pollutants that generates. Holden's incinerator is much too small to have sophisticated pollution controls like the large municipal incinerators must have, especially in the state of Washington. Once collected, separated before or and after collection, the goal of 50% recycled material will be comparable, if we get there, to what Japan is now doing. There's one city in Japan, Machida, which boasts that they recycle 90% of their city's garbage. But when we reach our 50% goal in 1995, we'll still have the other 50% to deal with. And there seem to be only three alternatives available. One is incineration. That is very costly. What little operating experience there's been with giant incinerators in the United States has been discouraging. And incineration can prevent recycling by the incinerator operators insisting on burning the paper to meet the contract amount of waste for the contract amount of electricity. And that's one thing that the Washington state law is designed to prevent, is incineration taking priority over recycling. Incineration leaves from 10 to 30% of the input as ash, and that range depends on the degree of separation there has been before incineration, whether non-burnables have been removed like glass and metal, and it depends on whether your figures are comparing the volume or the weight of material. Another problem with incineration is that neither the Federal Environmental Protection Agency nor the Washington State Department of Ecology has yet decided on the hazard classification for incinerator ash. On the one hand, if it's classified as non-hazardous, it may be used in roadbed and cinder block. Or it may be buried mixed in with the rest of the unburnable garbage in an ordinary municipal landfill. Or it may be designated a special waste, which will have to be buried in a designated separate landfill with extra precautions in the way of liners and leachate collection and treatment and so forth. Or it could be classified as hazardous waste under the specific testing definitions the EPA has. And if that's the case, it would put incineration costs out of the ballpark. There is no small fraction even of hazardous waste landfill space available in the United States to take care of even the present level of incinerator ash. Public opposition to incineration is widespread because of fears of health effects on the one hand from the air pollutants if you live downwind and from the ash and the leachate. And good citizens of Pierce County kept the Pierce County Council in session until 1:30 a.m. this summer, telling them they don't want an incinerator. Not only do they not want it in their neighborhood, they don't want it in Pierce County. For the short run at least, the long haul option may be another possibility. Of course, the recyclables will have to be diverted first under this new law for the solid waste management plan to get state approval. Yell'ham County in Oregon, eastern Oregon, where there is 10 inches or less of rainfall a year, they're one of the giant national waste management corporations, has built and is beginning to operate a new landfill that is eager for our business and is getting much of Portland's business. But of course, that would be subject to Oregon law, which would be a real risk for Washington entities. In 1978, the state of New Jersey tried to ban out-of-state garbage outright, but the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that they could not restrict interstate commerce in that manner. However, in 1987, the U.S. Court of Appeals ruled that Portland, Oregon could restrict private haulers from Washington from bringing in their garbage to the Portland landfill, which was rapidly running out of capacity and is being closed. Klickitat County in Washington, on our side of the Columbia, is developing a regional landfill, and there's talk of one being developed in Lewis County, which is just south of Pierce County, as well as possibilities on some Indian reservations, which are not generally subject to state regulations. Composting of your own lawn and garden wastes at home would fit under our definition of waste reduction, since it wouldn't ever get into the waste stream. Centralized facilities for composting yard wastes will be a necessity to meet Washington State's 50% recycling goals, as during the summer this may be up to a quarter of the solid waste that now goes to the landfill. Since useful soil conditioner results from this process, it fits our definition of recycling. There are a few facilities in other places which compost shredded mixed municipal solid waste, and they allegedly can sell that compost product even with the glass and plastic ground into it. But like incineration, mixed municipal solid waste composting has more history in Europe than in the United States, and there is little operating history here to see whether it is a pattern that is worth pursuing intensively. The better the source separation of the wastes, the more valuable the composted product will be. The less things that don't break down, like glass and metal, the less toxic materials like paint and pesticides and the heavy metals from batteries. In fact, pre-sorting for toxic materials, as well as to take out recyclable materials, will be very important whether the waste stream after that becomes incinerated. If the toxic materials aren't there, less of them can come out of the stack or be left in the ash. Landfills, a great deal of the problem is from toxic materials that had quite legally gone to those landfills in the past, and with composting, you can't use compost on food crops if there are more than defined levels of toxic materials within it. And there will always be a landfill at the tail end of all the other processes at the end of some road or other. So, with that introduction, I would like to hear your stories. Get what is it like in your locality? What are people in your town already doing? What would you be willing to do to help with the problem? And what do you think your neighbors would be willing to do? Buddy, willing to begin? Well, yes, back there.
I live in the suburb of Portland. Mm-hmm. And our old town, Gladstone, does a certain amount of promoting recycling and separation of garbage to the point that aluminum cans and glass, bike colors, they like separated. This is not enforced, this is strictly a volunteer thing, and we get some promotion, maybe a couple, three times a year through our disposal company, encouraging people to do it. And we have also a weekly pickup of any branches and grass trimmings, any vegetation that we care to separate and leave out in a special thing, and there's no extra fee for that. That's in with our taxes from the city.
Do you know what's done with that? Is it composted?
I'm not sure. I know in the area there is a Barclays company that has a great big pine mound. This is, I say maybe the last 3 years that it has available for sale, and it's a little cheaper rate than Barclays rate, as, and it's sold as a gardening medium.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been going on for some time, so I don't know if this disposal company gets it to them, or specifically if this disposal company does anything, but that resource is available.
And I've also heard that the city of Portland has signed a contract for a mixed municipal solid waste facility. I have no idea what portion of the waste stream that's intended to handle. Somebody else, yes?
Up in northern Wisconsin, where we used to live, people on welfare have to work so many hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things they do is they are garbologists. They do that by choice. They don't have to, they do it by choice. But they sell their rubber tires to a paper company that uses the rubber to, they superheat the rubber, then I guess it'll burn. They sell the plastic to someone who shreds it, puts it down for driveways up in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
The paper goes down to Nina, and they too are hearing the same thing that you're saying, that they cannot get rid of all the paper that they'd like to. The plastic is baled, the colored plastic is baled and sent somewhere else. The glass bottles are put into a semi-trailer. The aluminum tin cans are bailed and they're sold, and that operation pays for 5 employees for the city of 9,500 people and all their benefits. But their biggest problem, and then they bail their garbage and it goes to the side of the hill. And the DNR up there has told them that in 40 years they'll be able to go back and start over and repiling on the same spot. So they think that they're safe provided they don't close all the land. Wisconsin is tough as can be on landfill inclusion. They have some strict laws. They told the paper companies 20 years ago if they didn't get their act cleaned up, they'd close them down. And a couple of them said they wouldn't. They said, well, try us. And one of them was closed by state order because it was polluting the Wisconsin River. And then the rest of them got in line. And now the Wisconsin River, because of hydrogen sulfide and all the rest of it, is not getting dumped into the water when it's done, is cleaned up. And
well,
the game fish are farther up.
There are some success stories. I'm not sure how many other states. Recently, the state of Rhode Island passed a law making mandatory recycling for the whole state. In our Washington state law, it's up to the county or city, whoever is the responsible entity, for whether the recycling is mandatory or voluntary, but they're supposed to reach 50%, whichever road they take.
The plastic yes. Packaging is a little pet thing with me, and I hear that the Minneapolis, I'm from Minnesota, mm-hmm. and Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Just Minneapolis.
There was a Me Too. I think both of them, Minneapolis has acted more firmly for the time being. I know that St. Paul has got something on the books too, for banning certain kinds of packaging.
One problem with plastics is that there are at least 47 different kinds of common use, and nobody can tell the difference just by a glance at them. The only kinds of plastic that we can recycle within city of Tacoma and our immediate area are the plastic gallon milk jugs and the plastic 2-liter pop bottles. They're two different kinds. We were told by one of the commercial recyclers when we were visiting their establishment that the plastic pop bottles are just baled up and stored in a rented warehouse. And I've read that the entire industry for recycling that material is supplied just from those states that have beverage deposit laws so that the come back, and the relatively small amounts that are recycled from other states, there's really, would be recycled from other states, there's really no way of getting it to that plant in the economical way or of handling it there. Yes.
Now, Seattle has a pilot program now for recycling plastics. It's very small, but the whole intent is exactly what you're saying, finding out whether the average Joe citizen can tell the difference between various kinds of plastic. We won't know the results for a while on it, but it's an interesting additive to some of the other things we're doing up here. We have a municipal recycling program now that is voluntary. Currently, over 70% of the people in the community are recycling. So there's a great deal of interest, at least in our area, in the voluntary program. We also compost yard waste. That's been separated out. So in terms of an average family like mine, we used to have 2 30-gallon cans of garbage. We now end up with 1 20-gallon can that's very seldom half full every week. So that's the kind of progress that we've been making within Seattle in terms of individual efforts toward managing the solid waste. Well, we seem to be pretty successful up there in terms of that aspect of it.
Good. Yeah.
Our family, just in the last year, we have 4 children. Just in the last year, we've set up the bins in the garage and are doing the plastic milk jugs and the tin cans and all of that. And it's been good for all of us in that regard, learning more about recycling and solid waste. At the same time, the community that we live in Michigan, the garbage collection agencies will no longer pick up the lawn clippings and the leaves and that. They sent out an issue of how to build a compost pile to each of their customers, with the exception that if you buy their special bags for the clippings, which are quite exorbitantly priced, they would pick those up. And so most people are beginning to do that. And yet we live near an open field that's not developed yet. And now on Saturday, it's steady traffic past our house just to the open field where people are dropping the clippings. So to some extent it worked, and to the other extent, people take an easier way out and pitch it off the side of their vehicle someplace instead of at the landfill.
That's part of the problem. And whether it's legal or not to have it go to the landfill, it is increasingly expensive.
Right.
Yes.
Can you say anything all about the Dutch compost pile? I think it was in Reader's Digest, at least I thought I saw it there. Those piles look about a mile long, there had to have been a bunch of them.
I don't have any specific information on the Dutch practices with compost. I know that they are among the leaders in Europe as far as recycling of other forms. Over 90% of their aluminum, glass, and paper. Yeah.
Do you think it's reasonable at this point? I personally would like some mandatory recycling. Like you, a while back, you know, we saw on the East Coast how some inspectors were going to the garbage in just for seeing to that people were doing some of their separation and stuff. I mean, do you think it's reasonable that a national program like that could be put in effect?
I think it has to go along with market development. Aluminum cans, there's no problem. The industry is eager for them. It's to everybody's economic advantage that that gets recycled. With glass, it's more close to a break-even operation, but companies that use mostly recycled glass have an easier time meeting the air pollution emission requirements than companies that make glass out of fresh materials. So there's some advantages there, and it's just a matter of making sure that it gets properly separated and how the plant is set up to operate. And one thing I think that we're going to need to do on both a local and a national scale is to build in some economic incentives that take into account the avoided cost of not having to deal with it some other way more than justifies some subsidy for the recycling. It's still cheaper to pay the recyclers a fair amount to do that job than it is to handle it in any other legal or ethical way. But paper, it's a real problem. We have in Pierce County a group called the Recycling Roundtable. It's been meeting for several weeks. It includes the people in the recycling business and some other industries that provide a lot of material and be recycled. And their number one project for the coming year is to work on the newspaper market somehow. I don't know what they have in mind. Yeah.
My husband and I have sort of a private dispute going with some of our local stores. As far as plastic bags, you know, you go to the grocery store or you go to another store, a pharmacy or someplace, and they insist on putting, you know, the least little thing in a plastic bag.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, you know, do you have a paper bag? Well, some places you have a choice, but some places you don't. And so if we're buying one item, we've tried to say, I will just take it without a bag, and they won't let us. So I've even tried taking my own shopping bag along, my, you know, canvas bags. I don't want the bag. And some of the clerks insist that we have to take those bags. It's policy. One store in particular. And so we've talked with the manager, and we told him that we are considering no longer shopping in this store if you insist that we take these plastic bags. So if we talk to him, we can get out of the store taking a plastic bag. But I think that we need, more of us need to take a stand in those stores to either force them to also have a paper bag, which would be more degradable, or we need to take our shopping bag along. If we've got the sales slip with us, I don't know, you know, when we walk out, I don't know why we need it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and it's going to take a lot more of that. One of the comparisons that was made in one of these sources I have between European incineration and American incineration is in Europe, a person goes to the store with a string bag and carries it home full of unwrapped potatoes, onions, and bread. And we all know what happens here.
They use newspapers too to wrap things up, like
fish and chips. So,
In the 70s, my husband and I were in the Peace Corps in West Africa, and we were going through orientation. And one of my questions, they were telling us, you know, how we're going to live and getting us prepared to go out to our village. And one of my questions was, what do you do with your garbage? And people just kind of looked at me like, well, you'll find out. But what I found out was we really didn't have any garbage.
Mm-hmm.
We just didn't use nearly what we used to live here. And anything that we had that was extra, we found that if we just put it out on our porch, somebody would come and take it and find a use for it. And it's the same like when you were talking about getting things to like if you go to the store, they would always want to wrap things for us, but they would just use an old newspaper or something and expect us to use that newspaper again for something else. And it's just, you have to just change your mentality about what it is you have to, what it is you really need, and what it is you really have to use. And I don't think that we're going to change a whole lot until we start looking at that.
Right, and the legislature saying we have to change our mentality does not automatically bring it about.
Yeah. You had mentioned in your lecture on, I believe, Long Island with the amount of landfills that would be closing. That is somewhat unknown to people. What are the alternatives there when those indeed are shut down, if they're not ready for something else? I didn't know if I was chasing a child out the door back and forth. I don't know if I missed that or...
Well, I didn't say, but there are the two alternatives that they're using. They're building incinerators like mad, and then they'll still have to dispose of this ash, but in much less quantity. And they're hauling it to the Midwest to landfills, which, depending on how legal cases go, may end up barring the door.
I'm sure you mentioned that when I was out the door.
But the mindset is not there yet, even though the overwhelming problem is that the solid waste costs will be higher than any other utilities that the people pay. But they still keep generating it.
Yes. Paul.
It's in part of a problem because it's very profitable to be wasteful.
Profitable for someone, yes.
For businesses like the a small piece of thing, they have to make a large container for it to advertise it. The packaging. Mm-hmm. The packaging is all wasted. And so to be wasteful means to be profitable.
Exactly.
And that seems to be the real problem. Well, I think it's a real problem. That's one of the real problems that we have to deal with. And what we're doing here, building more waste plants and all that, is simply more waste.
That reminds me of experience. This state has an initiative process, and twice by initiative the citizens have said we want a beverage container deposit law, which just looks at one small piece but a significant piece of the problem. It was very easy to get signatures on that initiative. In both cases though, when the final vote at the election came, it was turned down. Roxy here was one of those times the Pierce County chair for this initiative. She found herself debating before Grange's Chambers of Commerce or whatever, the vice president of a major packaging corporation from California, who was sent up here to spend the month before the election campaigning against it. And $1 million was poured into the state to defeat that. Illegal and false material was stuffed into the shopping bags at Safeway, and part of the argument was the machinists were saying, we will lose our jobs making these cans. Our livelihood depends on our deliberately producing garbage for the sake of throwing it away. And although the statistics show that the number of jobs increase in the states where beverage container legislation passes, they aren't the same jobs, and they're not necessarily anywhere near as high-paying jobs.
And then, like the paper company, that new paper company in Japan, mm-hmm. that says that they cannot use the old newspaper or whatever it is to recycle because of the customers. Well, I think that's just a cop out.
Yep. Well, we think that too, and I'd be very interested in hearing how that one finally comes out.
The state to insist that they have equipment to recycle or don't give them the license.
But isn't this a case where you have to have a unified system throughout the whole United States?
It would help.
Because if a company gets a little stubborn about some policy, they could say, well, you don't want our business in this state, so we'll go to another state.
Yeah, and that would help greatly. Of course, then they can say, you don't want it in this country, we'll go to a different country.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing I think is when you look at that tin can law that you're talking about, mm-hmm. Michigan has it, Massachusetts and all of New England have it.
New York has it.
And I'll tell you, Oregon. The guys in Michigan holler. But what everybody doesn't know is they get a penny a can for every can, every bottle they take in, they get before the 4 cent goes back to the bottler. And historically, I used to work in the beer bottling industry, and I used to hear from the glass company once in a while. And they would tell me that X percentage of all the bottles that go out and cans that go out never come back. I don't care what the deposit is. You put $20 on it. Mm-hmm. people will, they'll break them, they'll use them for storage stuff, so that they make more bottles, they keep losing bottles, and they make an extra penny just by taking them back. So they read that employee that's counting all the beer bottles and the cans and the pop bottles in the back room. He's making his salary very nicely every hour.
Oh yeah. But in the states that do have these, the figures I just read are that some 90% do get back.
But the 10% is a loss.
Yeah. But the 10% is some more profit for the company too.
That's right. It's amazing how, being from Michigan and I, in the woods and along the lakes and streams an awful lot, when we used to go and you'd find just from hunting season and that, just discarded bottles, yeah, cans everywhere. Now we hunt and you don't find any, which is great. Well, at least we have them the same.
My daughter who went to Swoby said if you drop a tin can or aluminum can, get out of the way because 16 is fine for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Roxy?
When I was the chair of Pierce County's bottle bill, asking for it, one of the things that was said against the passage of that bill by the people who manufacture the bottles in particular in this case was that in Michigan it was terrible. They were having a terrible time because all the Boy Scouts couldn't get any money because nobody was throwing their stuff out, you know, and so it was just the whole thing was just ludicrous, and you just passed your law when we were going through that. And the people from Oregon thought we were absolutely retarded because they've already had theirs
had a long time,
about 15 years now.
Yeah.
And it's just, we're retarded. But, you know, if you think you can't buy a book, just forget that, folks. You've been bought. They buy you through advertising. And when they spent $1 million here, that was the most that had ever been spent against an initiative that time.
Yeah.
Did you say that most of the recyclable paper from the United States market was in Asia?
Yes.
What are the economics as far as recycling paper, as far as the United States is concerned? I think my husband works in a paper plant, and soapbox, that kind of paperboard is oftentimes recyclable, and sometimes you get stationery, you know, that'll say it was recycled. But I mean, what are the economics of it as far as recycling and new paper, and why aren't we using more of it, do you think?
Well, partly it's how the plant was built to begin with, and they would need to replace or severely modify existing pulp mills in order to use recycled paper, and that would require a front-end investment. The kind of paperboard used in packaging you're talking about is made out of recycled paper at a small plant in Tacoma as well as other places. I didn't know that. But for newspaper, there are, I think, two plants in Oregon are the only ones in the Pacific Northwest, which is a major center of pulp and paper, which use any recycled paper. And I don't know what the economics would be if we were starting over. But at present, it's, the economics don't seem to be there, no. But they could be, yes.
One of the reasons that they give is that it is so expensive to de-ink, and it's such a polluting process that they don't de-ink the newspapers. That's what I've been told by people in the industry.
Well, when they're recycled, they do de-ink them, and
yes,
that's true. There are pollution problems from that, but I can't believe they compare with what it takes to get the lignin out of the wood fiber to begin with.
It depends what kind of paper and what kind of ink. For instance, in your Sunday newspaper, your coupon pages are totally, they don't want them. They don't want any Time magazines because of the grade of paper. They don't want any magazines at all if they've got any colored ink on them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the newspaper pulp will take the ink, and somehow it's degradable. When you get that good paper, magazine paper, it's not newspaper, as far as when it's made. It's a different process. That ink is totally unacceptable in using it again. So what they end up doing is sorting. Back in Midwest and eastern part of the country, most of us who have shingles on our roof, that's probably the Toledo Blade or the Columbus Dispatch or the Lima Journal.
Really?
That's been shredded and mixed with something, and that's how all of our shingles for our roofs are made that way. So we do that.
You can always use recycled paper to make one grade less. It's more difficult to use it to make the same grade you started with. And when the hundreds of copies of three volumes of the Pierce County Solid Waste Management Plan were printed, the county decided as a matter of policy to spend several thousand additional dollars to buy recycled paper to print it on. It costs more and is of less quality. Yes.
Well, he more or less answered my question. I guess I was going to ask why they wouldn't take magazines. See, I live in Mount Vernon, mm-hmm. and I take my papers to the senior center, but they won't take magazines or catalogs or any cardboard or anything like that. And we do have a couple places that there that are recycling places, you know, that are privately mm-hmm. owned, of course. And I can take my bottles and my aluminum cans, mm-hmm. and you can also take your cardboard and stuff like that too. But why can't they use the...
Well, because what makes the paper shiny in a magazine is not paper. It's filled with a lot of clay-like material and other things that just gum up the works when they try to reprocess that. Now, we can put our magazines in with our mixed household paper, and the recyclers will take it. Of course, they won't give us anything for it, and they have difficulty getting much for it themselves, but it can be, some of that goes into making these packaging materials. And our recyclers tell me that anything that came to you in your newspaper can be sent back in the newspaper. There's a small enough amount of the glossy advertisement there that you don't have to separate it out, as I had been doing for quite a number of years. That you can just leave all that together. And I guess the few staples that come in that aren't that much of a problem, but that's another problem with magazines. They're likely to be stapled together. Well, I think we have to call this to a formal close. It's about time for first dinner, and I thank you very much for your attendance and especially for your participation. Thank you.